So my talk today obviously is more from an industry perspective. Title of my talk is Multidisciplinary Optimization Technologies, Development of Those Technologies at Bombardier and the Application of Those Technologies. Contents, I'm just going to speak briefly about Bombardier, about our products. We have quite a range of products in aerospace and in transportation. And then I'm going to get into MDO development at Bombardier, what we've done, where we came from, the MDO environment, some of the analysis tools that we use. And I'll go through one of the applications that we have as a proof of concept of the MDO methodology. And then what I'll do is I'll talk about the role of some of these technologies in some of our recent aircraft design exercises. And I thought by that I'd give, again, industry perspective. How are these tools really used? How do they play a role in a very complex aircraft design process? And followed by conclusions. So just a word on Bombardier. I guess most of you are familiar with the company. Two main divisions, aerospace and the train division. They happen to generate about equal revenue. This year we actually had robust profits. Each division has quite a large backlog and about similar amount of employees, something like 66,000 worldwide. One of the good things about working at Bombardier is the range of products that we have. Only in the business jet sector, we have quite a few aircraft, and we cover most of the market niches, from the small Learjets to the mid-sized Challenger family and the Global Express. And I've been fortunate enough in the last 20 years at Bombardier to work on many of these aircraft. In the regional sector, well, we have the turboprops that are built here in Toronto at De Havilland, and they're doing very, very well. The sales of turboprops have gone up in the last year or two because of the fuel prices. And then the regional jets that Bombardier started with the 50-passenger jet and then going on to the CRJ-1000. And most recently, our brand-new aircraft, the C-Series, in which we're going into the narrow-body segment. So in terms of motivation for MDO, I think, honestly, I would be preaching to the converted in this crowd, but clearly the benefits of MDO is that it contributes, it enables concurrent engineering. And it helps us get away from the traditional aircraft design process, which has always been sequential, which each discipline having clear boundaries and not much overlap traditionally, which of course leads to design flaws. When a modification is made in one discipline, it has impact in many other disciplines. It often generates or incurs rework, and it has impact on schedule. MDO is obviously a great enabling technology to get that concurrent engineering going and also contribute to set-based design. Benefits of MDO, obviously, it helps you develop a more balanced design. It tends to overcome inefficiencies between coordinating large groups of disciplines that work independently. It requires automation, which forces you to, which has the side benefit of increasing productivity. In terms of status of MDO, the field has been around quite a while, but it's fair to say that it's reached a certain maturity that makes it a practical technology, and it will soon become a standard across the industry. And it's just a natural evolution of engineering technology. Other benefits of MDO. Well, to do multidisciplinary optimization, you need to put a lot of your analysis tools in an optimization environment, which means you need to automate them. Optimizers tend to often abuse analysis code, so they have to be made a lot more robust. And of course, the accuracy. So you need to basically have better analysis tools, and this is a requirement for MDO, and therefore it's a side benefit. You need to automate, you need to standardize your tools and processes. You need to develop common workflow integration environments. Again, this helps productivity, traceability, helps communication between disciplines, and you have to map your processes and tools. So again, that helps you capture lessons learned, and it facilitates training of new employees. Our approach at Bombardier, we've been developing MDO for almost a decade now. Our approach has been to do it in an incremental basis. We like to think of MDO as something developing from the ground up using the analysis tools that are used by the designers. And of course, engaging the designers themselves, not a separate group of developers that develop MDO technologies, but used by the experienced designers in the company. Currently, the MDO environment that we use is based on a product from Ingenious called iSight. It's now part of Dassault Systèmes, actually. And we have a whole host of projects that we develop within that environment. And of course, many analysis tools that we've linked. This is just a short list. We have many more analysis tools than these. But basically, in terms of optimization codes, we have a code called ALOP, which is basically a gradient-based optimizer that we use inside and outside of the integration framework, inverse design codes such as INDES, Optima2D, which is a UTIAS code from Professor Zing. We have many Anthony Jameson codes, SIN103 being a 2D adjoint, SIN107, WingBody 3D adjoint, and we have a whole host of flow codes from Anthony Jameson. Some of the CFD codes that we use on a daily basis, we have different levels of fidelity. KTRAN is a transonic small disturbance that dates back from 25 years ago, still being used on a daily basis. FANCY is a full aircraft Navier-Stokes code developed in-house. I'll talk a little bit more about it. NSU-3D is a commercial code, unstructured. Those three codes are used on a daily basis for different types of applications. MZS is a very popular code from Mark Grella, Euler boundary layer, etc. We have many other 3D Navier-Stokes codes, StarCity, CFX, CM, CCM++. We tend to use them for different applications. And the ones in red, and a few more actually, this slide needs to be updated, are connected to the optimization environment. We also developed some conceptual structural analysis codes. These are codes that will develop a wing structure based on just the wing outer mold lines. A code called TWSAP, which stands for Thin-Walled Structural Analysis Program, has been developed in order to help in the MDO, and I'll speak about that a little more as I go along. In terms of, so we use a multi-fidelity approach from low to high fidelity. And in terms of low-fidelity tools, if you take an old TSD code and you combine in there some semi-empirical drag prediction tools that the company has validated over decades, over many aircraft, what happens is you get a combination that is actually quite effective. These are just two examples of the kind of prediction we do. Of course, being a TSD code, though, it'll be effective when the shocks are weak and there's no boundary layer separation, when the aircraft is well designed, but still very useful. This is DLRF-6 from the first drag prediction workshop and the prediction from KTRAN. On the right is flight test results on our Challenger 300. Those are trimmed polars. In general, this type of approach is accurate to within about 3% in terms of absolute drag, occasionally 4%, but obviously very useful, especially as a preliminary design tool. Then, of course, we have our full aircraft Navier-Stokes code developed in-house over the last 10 years. There's details of the formulation, but it's a standard self-centered code with fairly standard turbulence models. And it works very well. It's been fully parallelized using an MPI library. It's used on a daily basis. Those are some of the kinds of complex configurations that we analyze with it. Typically, we'll use a structured code mostly for clean configurations. We will not do high lift systems. We won't do, Bordelons, etc. We also have our own grid generation code here, MB Grid, CATIA-based, which was developed starting something like over 15 years ago, still use on a daily basis, and it's very important in terms of grid quality, in terms of getting accurate drag and robustness. This is a curve, a convergence curve from FANCY on the DLRF-6 Navier-Stokes analysis. This is a wing body configuration which with on three grids, and for this configuration the code managed to converge to machine accuracy on our in-house grid, the line in blue grid that we generated with MB Grid, about 4 million grid points. Whereas on other grids that were supplied for the drag prediction workshop, the convergence was not quite as good. Now, just illustrates the importance of the mesh. in terms of accuracy and robustness. In terms of drag prediction, this is again from the drag prediction fancy comparison with the wind tunnel results, and showing that the code captures the trends in terms of induced drag and shows the sensitivity to the mesh. So these are developments in terms of having the right robustness in the code and the right fidelity. Other technologies that have to be developed in conjunction with MDO, of course, is having a mesh mover to be used with fancy either an Euler mode or Navier-Stokes mode. So we've developed our own mesh mover capability. And this is an example of designing a wing for pressure, target pressure distributions. And the mesh mover can handle quite a few different types of configurations. And it's really the workhorse used in the design office in terms of designing wings. Typically, we'll use Euler boundary layer as our day-to-day wing design tool. NSU 3D and NSU 2D are tools that we use every day, typically for high-lift systems or more complex configurations. It is also linked to optimization environment, and the kind of work we've done typically is optimization and gap and overlap of slats and flaps, mostly in 2D in the optimization environment. The optimization in 3D tends to be done manually. In terms of laying out a structure, in MDO what's very important is determining, of course, the weight of the wing and also the deformation. And you need to have the weight being a function, of course, of the structure based on the physics, based on the wing loading. So what you need to do is, given a wing geometry, a planform, thickness distribution, you need to lay out a structure automatically. And so what was done at Bombardier is we used the actual methodologies that the structural engineers were using to define their wing geometry, and we basically implemented it and automated it. And this is just showing a wing planform and showing the layout of the ribs, and some of which are streamwise, some of which are normal to spar, and how for each rib then the structure is conceptualized in terms of stringers, and that stringers can be of various shapes, and there are analytical methods there that automatically size the stringers during the optimization process. The same thing for the spars and the spar caps. And then based on the layout of the structure and the skin thickness, the stiffness properties of the wing are computed by generating what's called a stick FEM model, which is made of beam elements and rib stations. And this stick model then is analyzed using Nastran to get the wing deformation under load and the material, the structural material is then integrated to get the weight of the wing box. The weight of the wing is then computed based on the wing box weight plus empirical relations for the control surfaces. So the code runs in an automated fashion. More recent development is now we're working on automating a full FEM. This here is just a conceptual image. I don't have any results of this because it's a recent development, but at the next CASI conference in May, we'll have a paper describing how we automatically generate the full FEM of the wing in the MDO environment. Of course, to size the structure, you need to apply the loads, and we have an automatic transfer for the aero loads, including the wing weight and the fuel loads, and we combine that, and of course, and determine the load intensities, the shear forces, and bending moments on the structure. And as a test of the program, to make sure that, to validate the process, this is an example of the TWSAP, where we only give the external lines of the wing, the OML, and we just run the program and see if it can match the stiffness of the wing. And this is a correlation, bending moment of inertia on the Global Express compared to the actual stiffness of the wing that was designed, of course, over many months. So it's obviously a very capable code and that could be used in an automated environment. So I'll move on to the application of these tools in MDO environment. Again, this is proof of concept. This is the optimization of a wing planform and profiles at the same time for a business jet. Here, the objective function was simply the weight of fuel and structure. In this case, Katran reused the low-fidelity code and TWSAP for the structure. The LRD gains were converted to fuel weight reduction for a constant range, constant maximum takeoff weight configuration, and also constant wing area in this case. Now, the LRDs calculated from Katran, of course, were for the full aircraft trimmed. The code trims on the fly as the optimization progresses. Only a single load case was used for to size the structure, and the total number of variables are 99, including 7 wing sections with 13 variables each, plus the planform parameters. This is just an overview of the process. It's fairly simple. It's a narrow structural optimization. We begin by defining the airfoils and planform. We do an error analysis. There's a cruise analysis, gives you the cruise L over D. And then there's the design load case, it's 2.5G. Design load case, of course, has to be iterated because we have to calculate the deformation of the wing under load. So that's an iterative process. Once we have the correct load and the correct deformation, the structure is sized. And of course, it's an iterative process, right? And then we combine the weight that comes from the structural sizing with the cruise L over D to build our objective function. This is the starting configuration. It's a Mach 0.8, cell 0.5 optimization. And this is the history of the optimization. On the left, it's the objective function, weight of fuel and structure in pounds as a function of function calls. And on the right is the increase in lift to drag ratio. Now, in this case, this optimization was not part of an actual aircraft design process. This was, again, proof of concept. So we had fuel volume constraints. We did have some thickness constraints in terms of minimum that thickness that the wing had to have. But in general, it was an optimization that was not highly constrained. I should qualify it that way. But it ran very well. 6,000 iterations took about less than 2 weeks to run at the time we ran this. This shows evolution of aspect ratio. Started from a fairly low aspect ratio of 7.4 all the way to 10.6. And on the right is the evolution of the wing structural weight. And this is an important graph in the sense that if you were to do an aircraft sizing exercise and you were to do carpet plots by varying aspect ratio, for example, you would get a substantially larger weight increase if you only vary aspect ratio by itself. But what the optimizer did is it did not only vary aspect ratio, it did other things as well. It optimized the span loading as it went along. It started with an elliptic span load, and it pushed the inloading further inboard to, again, reduce the weight. Also, that span load helps, of course, minimizing wave drag, and also is good for the trim drag. But it certainly helped minimize the increase in weight. The other thing that the optimizer did was reduce the sweep by 10 degrees inboard and 7 degrees outboard, but it also reduced the average to a receive by about 2%. So when all those parameters were traded, you had an increase in aspect ratio that increased L over D, but not a large increase in weight. And the profiles are optimized simultaneously with the wing planform. And you can see there at the beginning of the optimization, this is a section just inboard of mid-span, and near the outboard tip, from the initial airfoil to the final airfoil, which shows that the optimization was able to arrive at a very good optimization exercise from the point of view of the drag, the weight, and the wing pressure definition. And this is just a view of the initial geometry to the optimized geometry. So this was a very successful test case, and it dates back to a few years, actually. So what I thought I'd do now is move on and take that exercise, which shows that the mechanics of the problem are functioning very well, and then just go through how those technologies were then used in actual design environment in the recent design of the C-Series. This is just a short list of the design requirements for the C-Series. They're not a complete list by any means. It's just to highlight It's a Mach 0.78 airplane, cruise speed with an MMO of 0.82. There's requirements on a buffet boundary in terms of it being capable to fly at a CL range of 0.4 to 0.6 at Mach 0.78. Of course, there's a CL max requirement, balanced field land requirements. And it has to have good stall characteristics. Those are all typical requirements. Of course, you need to have a good control surface effectiveness maintained through the flight envelope all the way to a dive Mach number of 0.9. And typically, you have a long list of constraints. Some of these are the major ones. The wingspan was constrained by gate limitations. Of course, wing profile thickness was constrained in many parts from inboard to outboard of the wing to fit the systems, the actuators, and also to fit the structure. Winglet span is constrained, pylon width and volume for the systems. And main landing gear integration is a big issue for an aircraft like this because we have a big engine. And of course, the final wing surface also has to be manufacturable, so it has to be smooth, it cannot have curvature inflections. And you have to cater to all these constraints in your optimization environment. Some of the technologies applied to the SeaSayers are really all the ones I've already mentioned. You know, aero and the optimization, their Navier-Stokes code, but also, of course, testing at state-of-the-art wind tunnels, including ETW, which is a full flight Reynolds number test facility in Germany. One of the big design challenges with the C-Series was the aerodynamic integration of an ultra-high bypass ratio engine. This engine is a bypass ratio of 12, which is the largest currently in the industry. It is also the largest with respect to the wing local chord in terms of measuring, in terms of Bmax of the nacelle, the engine, divided by the local wing chord. And the design was made all the more challenging by the fact that this large engine was installed on a composite wing, and a composite wing, of course, uses materials that have lower allowables, stress allowables, than a metal wing, which means that if you put such a mass on the wing, you'll have constraints in terms of thickness for the wing that you have to live with. In terms of the planform optimization, now just to give a bit of background, the C-Series actually is a product that emanated from a previous project that was called BRJX at Bombardier. BRJX started actually in the late 90s, and it went on for 3 or 4 years. It had a different engine. And then after a while, it moved on and became the C-Series. Just to say that by the time we started putting some MDO technologies onto the aircraft, the design had evolved already to a certain point. So the initial wing planform was optimized using traditional aircraft sizing codes, and not only for one aircraft, but the C-Series is actually a family of aircraft, of at least two aircraft, possibly more in the future. The initial application of the MDO process that I just described initially had the tendency to produce unbalanced design or violate constraints. What I mean by that is, like I said earlier, this wing with this engine had a great number of constraints in terms of thickness, landing gear installation, volume requirements. It had, of course, its CL max requirements, which were also formulated in terms of CL max with ice accretion. And so we would do an optimization, and you would have, for instance, the leading edges being inadequate for the CL max, or you would produce trailing edge divergent trailing edges, which are good for high speed, but they're not good for from the structure point of view. So what we ended up doing is we ended up enriching our definition of constraints in the setup. As we did that, what ended up really happening was that the MDO process was fairly slow. It worked. It gave us typically some improvements. They were typically fairly incremental. And that's because, of course, the design was already quite evolved. And if we started from a design that was, let's say, less performing, as to have a different starting point, because this is one of the things we did a lot of, is to try different starting points, then the process was typically quite slow. And if you compared it with the design that an experienced designer would do, I would say more often than not, it was not quite as good, but sometimes it was. So the way we used it typically was that we would regularly apply it to verify the design and to advance the design. So we'd have it, you know, a certain update, then we'd apply the MDO, and on some occasions we'd get a small improvement, 1 or 2%, which is non-negligible, right? And then what would happen, of course, is we would actually learn from the optimization, apply those tendencies ourselves, and develop the design further. And so really, what we ended up doing for the planform optimization is we ended up using MDO more as a design exploration and a verification tool, really, than basically an automatic design system that takes it from point A to the final design. That's really basically the application. And I would say, just an approximation, the MDO effort really represented a small part of the total effort, maybe 10 to 15%. But it was very important because if we had, you know, a new set of requirements and we had worked on the wing for a certain amount of time, we would typically run it through the system and see if we were still at an optimum and see if the optimization could improve our design. Of course, the other part of the design, the profile, the wing profile design, and for that, we typically used Navier-Stokes, fancy Navier-Stokes. Typically, we use multi-point optimization. And this is just a sample of three-point design, with the blue being the initial and the red being the optimized condition. And you have there the initial and the improvements for each case. And here, the important thing is that the technology we had to develop in terms of getting an efficient MDO process benefited in these aerodynamic optimizations. In particular, we had to develop specific profile shape functions with embedded constraints in order to have effective optimization process. And by that I mean, if you put in a lot of explicit constraints in the design problem, typically it's a much more difficult problem for the optimizer. We developed shape functions based on the CST functions and with embedded constraints so that we can let the optimizer vary the geometry and come to an optimal more quickly. So we did a lot of this type of optimization, multi-point. We did a lot of 2D and Navier-Stokes based optimizations to explore the design space for profiles with different optimal points of different lift coefficients. And you have your polars on the left, drag rise curves on the upper right. And of course, we also looked at buffet capability of the profiles by plotting the trailing edge pressure distribution. Other details, in terms of, for example, having a wing that has proper stall characteristics and a competitive CL max, leading edge design is very important. But typically, to design an effective leading edge, you really need a lot of design variables right at the leading edge. Typically, not something you want to do when you're designing the whole wing. We have in the range of 13 to maybe 16 or 20 variables for each profile. If we were designing the leading edge, we'd put that many only on the leading edge. So what we did instead is, when we have a leading edge that was optimized for the low speed, we formulated shape functions that allowed us to maintain the leading edge radius and the leading edge properties and vary the wing, the profile camber distribution and thickness distribution to optimize the high speed characteristics of the profile without undoing the low speed characteristics. In terms of the wingspan load, we did use the MDO to optimize it. The span load was optimized, of course, with the engine on, with the jet of the engine. With Euler boundary layer. Starting point for the span load optimization, we typically like to start with an optimal subsonic span load that takes into account the trim. So this is a trimmed optimal span load. Then we did run the MDO to trade L over D versus wing weight. And then we adjusted the span load to make sure that the off-design conditions buffet were adequate and the star characteristics of the wing were also adequate. Typically, the MDO would tend to load the wing tip a little more than we were comfortable from a stall characteristic point of view. So there was some adjustment of the span load for the stall characteristics. But typically, we would start from a subsonic optimal load, which is in dashed, and we'd move through various steps to the span load in blue, which is actually, as you can see, is quite far from an elliptical span load, but it's optimal in a total drag and weight point of view. This is just a graph to show how we analyze the stall characteristics of a wing. This is it's running a panel code, subsonic panel code, and using a method called Valarezzo, which looks at the delta CP from the leading edge to trailing edge to quantify, based on empirical relations, where the wing is going to stall. And this process is automated, but it is also quite delicate. You have to do it properly, and sometimes you get peaks in these curves that you have to remove. And so it's not really very easy to put into an optimization environment, and typically we don't. We do this on a periodic basis. We look at and see what kind of span load is adequate to produce the kind of stall characteristics that we need, and then we enforce that span load in the optimization process. Evaluating buffet boundary, one of the things the optimizers will tend to do to minimize drag is load the outboard wing, and you may run into problems in terms of buffeting. You want the wing to buffet in the middle of the wingspan, and also you don't want to have any aileron reversal problems, for example. And of course, to really make sure that those requirements are satisfied, we typically will run an Ayers-Stokes code off design case and look at when the shock-induced separation begins, look at pitching moment curves, and determine when the buffet occurs. Again, this is not something that you can really easily put in an optimization environment, and so typically we don't. So what we do is we do a pulse analysis, and we typically limit the amount of load we put on the outboard wing based on this kind of analysis. In terms of validation, this is just for interest I throw in here. In terms of validation of our drag prediction tools, this is just one of the models of the C-Series that was tested at ETW in Cologne, Germany. It's a full flight Reynolds number facility, a very, very good facility, very reliable. And this shows the kind of prediction capability that we have. We've also done a validation of the C-Series power plant integration. Again, C-Series does have a large engine, large bypass ratio. And this shows these are half models floor mounted at a wind tunnel facility at the Aircraft Research Association in Bedford, England. On the right is a version of the model with what's called a through-flow nacelle. And on the left, the jet effect of the nacelle is simulated with what's called a TPS, a turbine-powered simulator. And here, just what I wanted to show here is this is a graph that gives you an indication of engine interference. One of the challenges with engine integration, large engine on the wing, of course, is the interference drag. And typically, if we go way back, wings were often designed with simplified methods, for example, wing bodies or isolated wings, and then people would put an engine on them and they'd have interference drag. Nowadays, of course, the design is done with the engine on, with the jet on, typically Euler boundary layer. So in fact, when you remove the engine, the wing is less optimal. And this is what this graph shows. Here what we have is a delta CD at the bottom as a function of lift coefficient. Delta CD is really a measure of the interference drag for various Mach number, starting Mach number 0.6 in red, going up to Mach 0.82 in amber. And this is the drag of the wing body, winglet, nacelle, pylon, minus the wing body, minus the nacelle, pylon. So what should be left is only the interference. And what it shows is in the cruise range, you have negative interference. In other words, when you remove the engine, the wing is less optimal than when the engine is on. So this is the status of MDO currently at Bombardier. We do use it on a daily basis in our design process. It's really just only one of the tools of the many tools that we use in the design process. But we're looking to expand it And so I just have a few slides in terms of what direction we're going in. So the current capability, we can do aerostructural optimizations of aircraft wings, but typically we do it for a given aircraft layout, aircraft concept. And there are limitations. And also the MDO currently is limited to one department, the aerodynamics department. So it's limited in scope in these various ways. It is aerostructural optimization for fixed aircraft size. Objective functions are quite simplified as we speak. We don't really have a mission analysis that goes with it. Wing structure is only sized by one load case. And compatibility of the final design with MRNO requirements is not ensured inherently. So what we're looking at now is to expand MDO to various disciplines. And currently the plan is to bring MTO further upstream to the conceptual design environment and begin involving all the key discipline and make MDO part of the aircraft design process. Of course, one of the things we're facing is the organizational challenges of MDO. I just thought I'd say a few words about that. So if you're going to have a coordinated MDO involving multiple engineering departments, you can have the challenge that now you have an inevitable overlap in skill sets and tools and processes, right? In parallel, you have the inherent complexity of aircraft design will keep requiring that you have highly specialized teams. You need people to spend many years in aerodynamics and structures and become experts in their field. That will always be the case. So you have conflicting requirements. You want to bring these things together, but at the same time, you need the specialization. So the way we're looking at it is, those parallel requirements dictate that the best way forward is to form cross-functional teams with MDO team members residing in various departments, and that the teams should involve experienced designers as well as younger designers in the process. So in terms of managing MDO technologies, it brings some fundamental changes to the engineering process. Utilization of higher fidelity tools at the conceptual design stage. Well, this means that typically tools that were used only in the disciplines in the past will now be used in conceptual design. Use of process integration optimization technologies. These have been used for a while, but now the idea is to have a common integration environment between all the disciplines. This is not necessarily easy to do because different disciplines have different requirements. You do have interdisciplinary tools, and the new paradigm is now that whereas in the past the disciplines were very clearly defined, very clear boundaries, now there's an overlap in skill sets and capabilities. And how do you manage that? So the way we look at it is what MDO should not change is the mandate and deliverables from each department. So, you know, a conceptual design department should still be doing the aircraft sizing and concept, the aerodynamics should still be doing the aerodynamics, etc. But now each of these departments is doing it in an MDO context. And the idea is that the function of each department shouldn't be defined by its tools and processes, because a lot of these tools now are going to be common, but it has to be defined by its mandate and deliverables. In terms of how to implement MDO, ideally, fully developed MDO capability should employ only high-fidelity tools in a fully integrated design environment. But the reality is that aircraft design is very complex. At the beginning, you have very little information. At the end, you have a high degree of enormous amount of detail. So you're always going to have design stages for various reasons. And so the idea is that aircraft design stages, the traditional conceptual, preliminary, and detailed design will remain. And there will be different types of MDO studies done in each, with different levels of fidelity in terms of the geometry of the aircraft as well as the analysis tools. And some of these MDO studies will focus primarily on one aspect of design and should be done in the relevant discipline. So the way we're planning to do this at Bombardier is, first of all, to have two levels of MDO in the company. One, we can qualify conceptual or preliminary MDO, in which the aircraft will be sized, the aircraft concept and layout, and the power plant will be sized as well, and in which some low to medium fidelity analysis tools will be used. And not only were the concept be defined, but also all the major integration issues in terms of systems integration, in terms of satisfying all the MRO requirements will be resolved. And once that is done, then we go into a detail NBO level, where now we're doing aerostructural shape optimization. That would be done typically more in the disciplines with the higher fidelity tools. And basically, you have a conceptual design department, aerodynamics department, and structures department doing a lot of optimization with other departments contributing analysis modules. So in conclusion, various MDO technologies are being developed at Bombardier. This MDO, these technologies have expanded our toolkit. We are using them to various degrees, depending on the schedule and the aircraft design exercise. Current capability, we can do air structural optimization, but the optimization technology and strategies and the turnaround times need to be further reduced in order to make it more practical in the design environment. They really still need to be a lot quicker in terms of turnaround to be more practical. So the further developments are as listed here. We are working on 3D Navier-Stokes adjoint capability. We're about a year or two away from that. And we see that coming in a strong way in the next couple of years. We're almost completed with an automated wing full FEM model, so when we put those two together, we'll have a fairly high fidelity aerostructural optimization capability. As I said, we're going to expand MDO to conceptual design and other disciplines. And as well, implement what I call designer-based solution techniques and optimization strategy. I didn't really get into that very much, but the idea is that we don't want to just throw a bunch of variables to an optimizer and say, just vary them and find a solution. We want to actually formulate the kinds of solutions a designer would implement where feasible in terms of an algorithm so that the optimizer actually executes a designer-based technique to arrive more quickly at a solution process. And of course, we need to enhance the realism of the aircraft definition and constraints in order to bring it all together. Thank you very much.
Taylor, any questions?
I have three if you have time.
Sure.
First one is, what are the properties of the MD grids that make the difference in that plot you showed where two grids against another source?
I think that in that case, there are two things. The orthogonality of the mesh near the boundary was superior with MB grid. And also, I think the aspect ratios of the mesh that were supplied, I think the ISM mesh, or the Boeing mesh for one, was a H-type topology. So it had these very high aspect ratios near the far field, and FANCY was not really very... the numeric formulation in FANCY was not very suitable for that. The ISM mesh, I think, was just not very highly orthogonal. That was the difference, yeah.
The second question is, you talked about doing flap gap optimization.
Right.
Do you have any experimental evidence that the turbulence model, for example, in MFU2D, can really handle that situation? Does it give you accurate predictions if you move the flap a little bit?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that we don't do a very large variation in the flap gap. Typically what it is you do some work, you have a certain slat and gap overlap that you know will work, but now you really want to nail it down, you want to have the optimal point. And also you want to define a zone of points that you want to test in a wind tunnel. Okay. So really we use it as an intermediate tool that says, okay, we've done some work. Now let's see, should we expand the zone that we're going to test? Should we reduce it? Because we want to minimize the number of positions we test in the wind tunnel. And then of course, we typically do this in 2D. In 3D, there's an effect. Typically the gaps and overlaps in the end are optimized in the wind tunnel, but you want to have the right parameters by the time you get to the tunnel.
Okay, when you did the multi-point optimization with three different Mach numbers, why do you hold CL fixed as opposed to say
Well, we've actually not try to do, I think, some of the optimizations that you do, where you say you want to leave the cell floating. Typically, what we do in 2D is we have a target cell that comes from the 3D optimization. Right? 3D optimization will say this is the optimal span load to minimize trim drag and weight and wave drag and the combination. And then at different stations on the wing, you have a lift coefficient that you're targeting. Right?
Change the Mach number. If you fix weight,
yeah.
If you change the Mach number, you've got to change CL. You're
right.
Somehow keeping CL fixed, it means you're changing altitude or something.
No, but what we'll do is we'll do many CLs, right? We generate a whole families of profiles of different CLs. So we'll do from low CL to high CL range, right? And what we're really doing is generating families of profiles with various properties and then plotting their characteristics and deciding which one is optimal from, you know, the cruise design point of view and other characteristics.